dissolved the council permanently. The last remnants of the old republic have been swept away.
At last, we will record our episode. At last, we will have content. Yes, calling all night sisters and brothers. We are back with another episode of the Senate Library, where we go deep diving into all things Star Wars literature, whether that's novels or comic books. If it can be read on a page, then we want to talk about it and how it all fits in with the rest of the Star Wars canon. First of all, thank you for joining us. I'm Nikki, and I am joined today by my fellow senators, Charlie, Kristen, and Claire. What is up, guys?
Hey.
What's up?
Howdy there, partner.
Oh, that's a new one.
I feel personally attacked, Charlie.
Quit appropriating her culture, Charlie.
Sorry. Got some wild cow here.
Tyler, you've yeed your last, huh?
Oh my god. Well,
I beg to differ there, ma'am.
good to see you all. We're all adopting that Dathomiri dialect right there.
Oh.
Yeah, wow, it's Mama Tau then. Got them magic.
Got them magics.
Them witchcrafters.
Oh my lord.
Honey, we got some witches on the porch.
What are they doing on the porch? Are they like Jehovah's Witnesses? Do they go door to door and like
they try to sell you moonshine?
Dude, I'd let them in.
Some green liquid. Moonshine.
Some green liquid. Some hooch.
This is the good hooch my grandpa made.
I love Tom Hanks.
I love some bathtub hooch.
Okay, so as you can tell, maybe, as you can maybe tell, we have convened today to discuss the pretty cool comic, Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir. It is a genuine classic for anybody who loves the Clone Wars, loves Darth Maul, loves the underworld. It has all sorts of great stuff in it, and we just want to dig in and talk about all the cool stuff. So I guess first of all, what did you guys think of the novel or the comic itself? Are you a fan of this one?
It was interesting. I'm catching up on Star Wars comics because I am V behind. And so this comic series was made in 2014. And that was, you know, before all of the hullabaloo with like the Force Awakens, things like that. So the storytelling was really interesting. It's been a million years since I've seen the Clone Wars cartoon series. So I'm not really sure where this comic is placed in relation to that, but, I liked it, just because of how it placed, Maul, with Darth Sidious and Count Dooku, and General Grievous. And of course, you had Obi-Wan coming back to try to finish what he started. So I liked it.
I love this comic. I was so excited when we had like 800 excuses to go back and read this comic because, you know, Maul has been super prevalent in all of the new canon Star Wars storytelling, in Rebels and in Solo. And I mean, you know, I'll take any opportunity to talk about Darth Maul. And this comic's just, I love it so much. And I love, and it was super interesting to go back and reread it because I haven't read it in a few years. And this was the last Dark Horse comic before Marvel took over the license. So it was, you can totally tell going back and like reading a bunch of the new Star Wars comics and then going back and like, oh, this is Dark Horse, which I love. I absolutely adore Dark Horse, and I have coffee table books of all their Star Wars art from various comics that they've done in the past. And, but yeah, I adore this comic. There's a part of me that like wishes that this was able to be animated as an episode of Clone Wars. It would have been just so exciting, but also the artwork in this is beautiful, and super interesting and action-packed, and it has Dathomir and my boy Darth Maul and scary, grumpy-looking Dooku, and yeah, what else could you possibly ask for? I love this comic. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I really dig this comic. I remember picking it up, like you said, I think 2014 to what, 5 years ago now? Yeah, I really like the, not just Darth Maul, but actually the whole Shadow Collective itself and diving into that a bit more. It's funny that you said that, Claire, about you thinking it worked, you would wish you could see this animated, because I consider this a positive, by the way. I felt like this arc adapted better to like a different medium than Dark Disciple did. Because with Dark Disciple, it was so good, and the way you read it, it lends itself more to a visual format. So you kind of wait to see that on the big screen or the TV. Whereas this arc works, it works as a comic book. It works quite well, so it does its job, I think, and it's pretty cool.
It's a good ride.
That Darth Sidious is a wrong one.
He's got some schemes.
he's a naughty,
a clever man, though. Yeah, I was. This is the first time I read it, preparing for this podcast, so that was a fun thing to journey into, especially like as Claire said, because Maul is really hot right now, and there's a lot of stuff in this comic itself that has shown up in some of our visual media after the fact. So that's a pretty cool thing. So I guess on the rest of the schedule today, we're just gonna give you guys a really quick sort of synopsis of what happens I keep wanting to say novel. what happens in this little comic. And then we're just going to dig into some of the cool stuff, like the relationships between the characters and other sort of just cool facts that we can extract from this story. So without any further delay, let us jump into our Gauntlet Fighter and head to Dathomir. So, it opens. Oh, first of all, Darth Maul, son of Dathomir, written by Jeremy Barlow, pencils by Juan Frigeri. Total legends. okay, so it starts with a nice little crawl that reads like, after surviving his confrontation with Obi-Wan Kenobi on Naboo and being saved from madness by the Dathomir witch, Mother Talzin, Darth Maul has constructed a vast criminal syndicate known as the Shadow Collective, gathering the galaxy's most feared crime lords. Black Sun, the Pikes, and even the Mighty Hutts have all fallen in line behind the Dark Warrior. From a base of operations on the planet Mandalore, Maul plots revenge against his many enemies. But Maul's lust for power and conquest has drawn a great enemy upon him, his former master, Darth Sidious. Judging Maul a threat to his own designs, Sidious has defeated his former apprentice, ruthlessly murdering Maul's brother, Savage Opress, and leaving Maul beaten, but curiously still alive and imprisoned.
All right, so that's the crawl, and now we're opening up with the first comic book in the series. So we have Maul, no longer Darth. Maul, formerly known as Darth. I don't know if you want to make that joke.
The artist. Formerly known as Darth.
So Maul is held in a secret prison. I'm going to butcher this. It's called On Stygian? We're going to roll with it.
Let's roll with it.
Do it.
Maul is held in a secret prison on Stygian, watched over by Sidious and Dooku. Sidious wants to use Maul to finally wrap up this whole witchcraft mess he's got going on and definitely destroy Mother Talzin. Right? Talzin? Talzin? We'll roll with it. Meanwhile, talcum powder. Meanwhile, there are Mandalorians still loyal to Maul, and they attack the prison and break their leader out of his containment. Saxon, Cast, and Maul retreat to the planet Zanbar to consolidate forces and plan for their next move. So while that while that's going on, Dooku instructs General Grievous to lead his fleet to Zanbar and punch Maul hard in the nose. Because Maul is a shark, I guess. He's very particular about not destroying him, just wounding his pride enough to force him to seek the protection of Talzin, who needs to be forced out into the open in order for Sidious to get rid of Talzin. Having reclaimed the Darksaber, Maul leads his warriors against Grievous' forces and escapes after taking heavy losses. Maul reaches out to Mother Talzin, who suspects a trap by Sidious, and she tells Maul to retreat to Ord Mantell. Right? Ord Mantell?
Mm-hmm. Mantell? Ord Mantell.
Ord Mantell, thank you. I'm really bad at Star Wars. Sorry, guys. I'm bad at Star Wars. Upon arriving and meeting with Black Sun and the Pikes, Knight Brothers from Dothmere arrive to help Maul. Just then, Grievous arrives with another invasion force. What happens next?
Oh, shit. Thanks to Separatist spies catching sight of Mando ships heading to Ord Mantell, Grievous deploys an orbital bombardment onto Maul's suspected location, and the droids go to war with the Shadow Collective forces. After skillful use of the gauntlet fighters, Maul boards Grievous' flagship and captures the droid general. Upon deactivating the droids, Maul's forces also detain Count Dooku. While Talzin and Maul celebrate the victory, the battle has caught the attention of the Jedi. Mace Windu, Obi-Wan, Aayla Secura, and Tipley head to Ord Mantell to analyze the ruins of the battle. The Jedi deduce the Shadow Collective fought the droids and have flown to a hidden base amongst a cluster of asteroids. On that base, Maul flexes in front of Sidious with his two prisoners. Cool. After sending Grievous to a cell, Maul tries to convince Dooku to serve him and work to destroy Sidious. Dooku, not pleased after his last experience with a Dathomiri witchcraft, declines. Talzin's spirit reveals that Sidious is deceiving Dooku and then recalls how he stole her son, Maul, from her. During the conversation, the Republic forces attack the base, and Dooku secretly uses the Force to release him from his cell. Dooku and Maul fight the Jedi, and poor Tipley is annihilated by Dooku. R.I.P.
Tough luck.
Grievous goes on his own rampage against the Mandos and then jets out of there. Maul and Dooku escape the base as the Republic takes control. Palpatine is like, ah, cool story, brah, when Mace gets the conspiracy theory. I'm reading this from the...
I love it.
Can I just read that last line again? Palpatine... cool story, brah.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. So, anyway. So Mace
just Windu... Just second.
So Mace Windu gets that conspiracy very wrong. And then tensions rise between Black Sun, the Pikes, and Maul's Mandos, and he takes Dooku to Dathomir and uses the Count as a sacrifice to bring Mother Talzin back for good. Dooku is getting straight up boned by Witch Nikki. Dooku is getting straight up boned by witchcraft, but Sidious and Grievous have arrived in a Sith infiltrator and let Maul know that this party's over. Upon falling under attack, Black Sun and the Pikes are like, yo, if you're not going to help us, we're out of this shit. And so the Shadow Collective begins to crumble. Lightsabers clash as Maul, Sidious, and Grievous fight to the death. A Talzin-controlled Dooku enters the fray, but is easily outskilled by Sidious. Talzin bursts free from Dooku's body and engages in a magic unlightning showdown with Sidious. Maul offers his mother's strength while a revived Dooku joins his master's lightning. With the Separatist armies closing in, Maul's Mandos come to take him away, but he refuses to leave his mother. Talzin tells him to escape and forces him onto the ship straight up like Kanan and Jarrus and Rebels, and she buys time for him to escape before Grievous comes in and wipes her out for good. With Maul on the run and the Shadow Collective shattered, Sidious stands victorious in the knowledge that the Sith's future as the dominant power in the galaxy is as strong as it's ever been.
Dun, dun, dun!
And that was the comic.
What a story. So, I guess the first thing we can mention is that this was originally tied to Dark Horse, right?
Yeah, originally, yes.
And it was re-released when Marvel sort of took control of Star Wars comics. So I guess when it was under Dark Horse, it was they were adapted Clone Wars scripts. Is that right?
Yes. Just like Dark Disciples.
Yes, that's right.
Right. So how do you guys think this would have played out as an arc of Clone Wars episodes? Do you think it would have been a classic four-parter?
Okay, I'm coming in with the hot takes here. I'm glad it was not in the Clone Wars show. Because while this comic was good, I just felt like it was such a waste of time and resources for Darth Maul. Like, he literally accomplished nothing. And he lost everything. Like, you know, he starts out with this great thing of, I'm going to go after Sidious. I'm going to get Dooku to work for me. I have all of these powers behind me. It's going to be great. But obviously it wasn't great. So he went through all of this trouble for nothing. It was a huge waste of time and resources for him. So I don't know. I'm glad that this was sort of like a comic book series, because it neither added nor took away from the Clone Wars show. So to me, if you watched the Clone Wars TV series and you hadn't have read this comic series, you would still be okay. It was just sort of solidifying that although Darth Maul although he is a smart person, he's just all over the place, and his anger is just corrupting him too much to think straight. And so Sidious obviously uses that against him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of agree, because like, if it wasn't the show, we'd literally watch Mother Talzin take a huge L for like the third time. And it's like, this poor lady just can't get it right. So yeah, I think it is nice that it's in this sort of separate medium, because it definitely would have taken up some season real estate. And yeah, like, it doesn't move too, like, it's definitely like fascinating character dynamics and stuff like that, but it doesn't move too much forward in like a seasonal arc or whatever. So yeah, I think I agree with your hot take.
Thank
it's
you.
It's lukewarm for me.
Okay.
it's not as hot.
I'll take it.
I think, yeah, I'm in the middle. I kind of agree with you, but there's also another thing I want to keep in mind, which is that if we're assuming that this arc would have been tending to the actual TV stories, I would imagine that the other stories would be made as well. So while I agree that it'd be kind of, I don't think it'd be one of those four arc stories where it wasn't bad, but it wasn't amazing either. I do like the idea of seeing the Shredder Collective being dismantled and dealt with by Sidious in a clever way, to prove how, like, you know, how he's smart he is, basically. But if that was just it, then I'd be like, who cares? But the other thing I want to keep in mind is that also this was building up to the Siege of Mandalore. So we know that Maul retreats back to Mandalore, mm-hmm. which I'm assuming is the only sort of power ground he has left, is his reign of Mandalore. And it would, if this wasn't a story arc, it would be strange to see him go from on the floor being electrocuted by Palpatine to on the throne.
Right.
It'd be like, oh, what happened there? So, yeah. In this scenario, if we had to do that, I wouldn't mind there being a story arc. Maybe not four episodes long. Maybe two at most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder how much was added when they were like, oh, well, we can take the time in this comic to tell the story. Like, I imagine the same was with Dark Disciple, right? Like, not all of that was going to make it into, you know, the episode. Actually, I guess they did have like 8 episodes planned for that. but you can imagine that they decided to take some further liberties when they knew they could dedicate its own little thing to it.
That makes sense, yeah, I think for sure. Especially like, I'm just interested, would we actually end up seeing General Grievous punch Darth Maul in the nose on telly? Because if that was going to happen, I want to see it.
Oh, but his handsome face, though.
Yeah, but if he bleeds, what, like, do you see it? Because it's red, or has he got a different kind of blood?
That's a good question. I actually don't know.
Grievous is like, do you bleed?
Well, I'm going to also disagree with both of you, all three of you.
Wow.
Well, 2.5 of
you. Wow.
Because Charlie has agreed. I would love to have seen this this arc in the Clone Wars, partially because I am just a glutton for Darth Maul and Sam Witwer's voicing Darth Maul. And there's so many things in this story that I just want to see move and have so much life in it. Like, anytime the Darksaber's on screen, give it to me. I want to know more about... Give it to me, Charlie! Ugh. Taking it back now. Anytime the Mando action, I want to see more of Black Sun and the Pikes actually, like, do something. Because we really only get them doing any sort of action in that episode where, you know, Maul is staging the coup to have... Prime Minister Almec take over Mandalore again. But I think that what's really going to be interesting, I think, is how, without this story being told in Clone Wars, how we're going to move to the Siege of Mandalore. Because you're right, Charlie. When we left off, Sidious was like, I have captured you and I have plans for you or whatever. I don't do a good Sidious, whatever. But and going from that to him being him losing his criminal empire and being free and back on Mandalore. But yeah, I really love, and also we, other than that, we'll just hear off screen about the death of Mother Talzin, which I feel like is kind of too big of a moment to not show on screen if you're, you know. But I really love this comic though, and I just think that it was told, the story was told in such a great way in this medium. So I really don't need it, but I want it. That's my takeaway.
That's the Star Wars fan motto.
I don't need it, but I want it.
Exactly. Oh, man.
Well, I guess to sort of further dig into this, I think there are some like very key relationships that are explored throughout this story. And I think the biggest one that I can think of is also the oldest one in our minds concerning these characters. And that's between Maul and Darth Sidious. Because as we know, in The Phantom Menace, Darth Sidious is the master, Darth Maul is the prized apprentice, and I guess shit happens. Obi-Wan happens in Naboo, and that really kind of shakes up their dynamic. So what did you guys think about the way this comic explored that side or their relationship between former master and apprentice? Sidious has already dealt Maul a huge L on in the end of his Clone Wars arc on Mandalore. And how did you feel about the way they handled those?
I feel like... I don't know. It was really well done because you had Darth Maul, who's not taking any more bullshit from Sidious, and is saying, you know, when Dooku is captured, or when he captures Dooku and Grievous, he kind of sends Grievous away, and he talks to Dooku saying, hey, me and you were both playing the same game, pal. You know Sidious, you're just a resource to him. And what was very interesting about that dynamic is that Dooku was fully aware of that. He's fully aware of the type of Sith Lord that Sidious is, but he's smart. Well, I mean, I don't know. The beginning of Revenge of the Sith says otherwise, but, he is smart by playing the end game. So Darth Maul just kind of strikes me as that type of, rebellious person that doesn't know what they really want. They're still trying to figure things out. They're like a kid coming to their conservative parent telling them that they're a libertarian now. So it's like just this interesting dynamic because Maul knows that that Sidious is a bad person, that Sidious is a manipulator and things like that. But he's also not, I suppose, fighting for the good guys. So that dynamic of them clashing and fighting is very interesting because Maul's sort of doing his own thing. And even though Maul knows the type of person that Sidious is, Maul is still not smart enough to understand that Sidious has planned ahead for this. And Sidious knows what's up. So it's a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I like, you made a really good point that it's just with their relationship, it's kind of sad to me almost that like no matter how much Maul wants to overthrow Sidious and like hate Sidious, but he's still stuck in his web and in his teachings. Like right at the beginning when he's captured and on the imprisoned by Sidious, Sidious says, do not mistake the fact that I have allowed you to live for compassion, my former apprentice. And Maul says, there is purpose for everything in the galaxy and a way to destroy it. And Sidious goes, I see you remember your lessons. So even no matter how much he hates him and no matter how much he plans to overthrow him, he's stuck in the teachings of his former father figure, of his former mentor. And Sidious has somehow manipulated Maul so thoroughly that, you know, it's just so fascinating to me that Sidious should be the one that he's burning with rage at in that moment, but he doesn't turn into an angry monster until Dooku steps in the room. That there's still a part of Maul that needs Sidious, and that, you know, that Sidious has taught him that how to be manipulative and cunning, and Maul thinks that he's gained those lessons, but he's not the master. He will always be the apprentice in that, and Sidious is just 18 steps ahead of him at all times. There's so many points in this comic where Maul thinks that he's, you know, one step ahead of Sidious, that he's gonna out-scheme him, that he and Mother Talzin are like ahead of him, but you just know he's not. You know he's not the major puppet master. And yeah, I love watching their relationship in this.
I think it's kind of funny how you talk about what he learned from Sidious, you know. And sorry Daredevil fans, I forget the character's name, but it reminds me of that relationship between like Daredevil and the old blind guy. Charlie, do you know?
Stick.
Yeah, where Daredevil is like, man, fuck this guy, but then like he also can't like deny the fact that he like learned a lot from him. And I think Maul is sort of the same, because I mean he's been like, he was with him when he was a child up until, you know, adulthood, just learning from this dude. And yeah, he like abused him in, you know, shitty ways and ditched him and killed his brother and all this good shit. But like, I mean, Maul is who he is because of Sidious. So it's interesting for them to have, you know, still have that connection where even though they're enemies, there's still that bond.
It's kind of like when you buy a phone and you've broken it, and you think it's broken for good, and then like a few years later it turns up again.
To try and kill you.
Yeah, to try and kill you. But you've got a brand new phone now. And you could go back to the old phone, but you know it's still a little bit damaged, and you got a brand new one, so you kind of got to just stick with it. I do feel bad for him. It's also kind of like, you know when you bump into your ex for the first time in a while, but now they're going out with a grand count from Cyrano. You're like outclassed because he's the leader of the separatists, and you're just a humble.
That exact scenario happens to me all the time, Charlie.
It really is an everyday struggle.
They've got fancy pajamas and everything. I really love their relationship because obviously, like, Palpatine, even though he's like, he doesn't want him to fuck with his plans, he still, I think, harbors some like respect for Maul. Like the fact that he's built himself back up and created this force, which is a rival. Like when you consider the Clone Wars, it's always supposed to be the two sides that Palpatine's got full control of. So the fact that he can't control this third side that's joining in, it's probably the biggest threat to him personally at that time, because he knows what's going on both sides because he's in control of it. He's not in control of this bit. Mm-hmm. So it says something about his training with Maul that he got to that stage, which I think is really interesting. And, you know, maybe he was too good for his own detriment.
Also, can we talk about Mace Windu being a freaking idiot? Like at the end, he's like, oh, Dooku's the Sith Lord we've been looking for, and Maul is his apprentice. Like, wow. You're so far from the truth, man. That's not even.
The adapted Clone Wars content is just several tough looks for Mace Windu. Like, he does not come off great in Dark Disciple.
No, he does not.
Nor does Ki-Adi Mundi has a pretty rough book as well.
Okay, Mace, let's use our heads. They were fighting against each other. How would they be working together? And then his whole thing was, it was a distraction. Mace, look with your special eyes.
Look with your special eyes.
Like, Sidious is probably thinking, you idiot. He was probably really close to revealing to him, no, you idiot.
Can't wait to lightsaber you later.
They put the drugs in our blue milk. Mace, stop it. 9/11 didn't happen. Mace, stop it.
Oh my god.
Cut that out.
Yeah, I mean, that's why in that panel, Palpatine is facing the other way because he doesn't want to see Mace he doesn't want to show Mace that he's definitely getting the thickening over how stupid
he's like trying really hard not to laugh. Like Mace is telling him like over the holo thing, and then you can just hear him just like cracking up and just trying really hard not to laugh. And Mace is like, "What's so funny?" Nothing. Continue.
Masameda told me a funny joke earlier. our other relationship that we've already sort of hinted at is between Maul and Dooku, and these are the two apprentices. And sort of like Charlie said, there is very much that sort of like that relationship jealousy going on. I love that line where, like, it's right at the beginning when Maul sees Dooku and he's like, "Oh, I've heard much of you since my rebirth. I expected more." And just that, you know, these two people, he's like sizing up the new boyfriend, and he's like, he's old and weird.
He's old and weird. I don't like
he's old and not red and no horns, and I don't like this. And I love how they have this sort of, it's very Sith how they have this sort of switching allegiances throughout, right? Like they start off as enemies, and Maul's like, "Yo, come with me, we can take this dude down." And then he's like, "Lol, JK, we're gonna sacrifice you."
Psych.
I could not be a part of like the Sith, because it's just too much hard work. You can't trust anybody. You just have to assume that like every day going to work, somebody's gonna betray you or try to capture you. And then you're going to have to work with that person. And then you know that your boss thinks that you're just replaceable. So if you get captured, they're like, "Oh, well, on to the next one." And you're like, "Wait a minute. I'm Count Dooku. Like, I've done all this cool stuff." And then Sidious is like, "Yeah, it doesn't matter. I can find a different one." So
I like the life of Dwight Schrute.
Aww.
You're going to go to work and that's what's going to fuck with you.
It amazes me, like, how having a strong allegiance to the Emperor gets you literally nothing. Like, Count Dooku is a very smart, intelligent guy. And he thinks that his allegiance to the Emperor is going to save him. But, I mean, you clearly see it in this comic book. And I'm 100% willing to bet that Darth Sidious meant it when he said, "Kill them. They're of no use to me." like, it, probably expecting Maul to just kill Grievous and Dooku when they got captured. He, like, it just absolutely astounds me that Dooku's thought process is, well, if Sidious is powerful, then, you know, Maul, and he knows the end game, I'm just going to stick with him. No! No! He doesn't care about you. Ugh, it's really frustrating. And then, you know, Dooku and Maul's relationship, you know, where Maul's trying to shed light on the issue, saying, hey, you're exposable, you're nothing, you're trash, you're just a number. To Sidious, take it from me, you know, the ex-apprentice, you know, he left me high and dry. I had to figure it out on my own. He's going to do the same to you. But spoiler alert, your head's going to get cut off by Anakin Skywalker under the permission of Darth Sidious. So it's frustrating.
I do agree. Do you reckon there should have been a deleted scene where at the end Darth Sidious is like, Master, is everything good now? And then there's like Palpatine's on his phone looking at, like, he's just swiping through pictures of Anakin. He's like, yeah, it's fine. He's, you know, you're not going to leave me, are you? Nah. And then, like, as he walks out, there's like a hallway full of pictures of Anakin. On Uncle Palpatine's name.
Like a shrine of Anakin.
Oh my god.
That new hot young thing.
Like pod racing.
Like, people are so exposable to Sidious. He does not care about them. He cares about him and what he wants and his power. And he doesn't care who he employs under him to get it done. And if they don't get it done, thank you, next. He's on to the next one. Dooku, you stupid.
It's why in the movie, I guess in the novelization of Revenge of the Sith, it's much more charted, but it's why it's a great scene in the movie that, like, just that look that Christopher Lee gives when he's like, fuck. Yeah, just kill him.
Breaks my heart. And
it's the shock, right? Like in the novelization, we get that internal, you know, dialogue of Dooku where he's like, yeah, we're going to kill Obi-Wan, get this guy. It's going to be a three-way of our dreams. And then he's like, oh shit, I've been played. In the movie, Christopher Lee.
Sorry.
In the movie, Christopher Lee has to do that with one
he
look.
He doesn't. And but it's absolutely frustrating because he has that look of shock. And I'm like, bitch, you knew this was going to happen. Like, the trail behind
Darth Maul told you.
Darth Sidious told you, although not directly to your face. Like, you had all of this trail of stuff. You saw how expendable Grievous was. You don't think you're in the same boat, buddy? Just because you have a cape and a crooked lightsaber doesn't mean you're better than everybody else. Like, you know this is going to happen.
I mean, it might.
Grievous and money. Revenge of the Sith, where he's like, oh, yes, master. And he's like... Soon I'll have a new apprentice, far more strong and powerful. By the way, if I don't return my calls, I'm not going to shut down your army or anything. Why would you say that?
Can we talk about the shade that Grievous throws Dooku? Like when they imprison Grievous in the cell? Like, Dooku's going to free him with the Force, but, like, can we talk about Grievous being like, hopefully next time I don't have to add your lightsaber to my collection? Like, talk about shitty coworkers. He's like, hope you're not dead, otherwise I'll have to take that beautiful crooked lightsaber. Like, damn, bro.
That's because... Bad is dumb. The story of Star Wars. Bad is dumb. So another huge sort of relationship we have in the story is between Maul and Mommy. Mother Talzin, mother and son. Now, I don't remember how much this of a revelation this was, because I feel like in the show there's not much that really indicates there's any sort of actual sort of like blood relationship, because the way the like Night Sisters use the term like brother and sister amongst each other, you just sort of, and of course the mother title, it just sort of seemed like a, you know, a systematic type thing. But they're actually flesh and blood in this story now, so What did you guys think of Mother Talzin and Maul interacting in this story?
That's like one of my favorite parts of this is it's like it totally goes to show that like no matter how much you accomplish, no matter how, you know, what skills you gain or how far you go in life, there are always going to be moments where you just need your mom. And it totally shows, like, you could be a, you know, crazy Sith Lord. And sometimes you need mom's guidance, man, especially if your mom is as cool and as spooky as Mother Talzin. And I love seeing, because she's so scary, super scary. But I love seeing, like, the nurturing side of her with Maul. There's a lot of moments that, you know, it's so cool to see their relationship and imagine like how crazy different Maul's life would have been if Sidious hadn't taken him as a small boy, if Mother Talzin had been the one, you know, nurturing him and teaching him. And it's so awesome. And it's like just she loves him. He is her son. And through this episode, through this comic, she teaches him so much in such a short amount of time, in my opinion, because Maul, you know, he's still not super in control of his rage, and he's not the cool, calculating Dooku type. He's going to get pissed, and he's going to explode. But I like that you can see her teaching him, in many ways, all these, like, tactical and, like, cognitive planning skills beyond the brute force. Like, she guides him, but he fills in the gaps. She's like, well, this is kind of how our plan is going to go, and we're going to lure him here and this. And then Maul's responsible for the battle, and Maul and you just see him, her, like, Mr. Miyagi him throughout this comic. At least that's the impression that I got from it. And I love and I love how this losing this relationship is going to change him and change how he develops, because dude, I want to know what it would be like if Maul was with Talzin the whole time, and, you know, if he would be Sith sorcery Maul, if he'd be something different. But anyway, I think them.
That would be a good sitcom.
Yeah,
like mother and son between Mother Talzin and Darth Maul, and like they have to catch up for time lost. Yeah.
Don't to move back to in brush with mom.
Your teeth, Maul.
She's got a cool house.
Yeah, like she brings someone home and he's like
some mood lighting. Oh my god.
I have a different opinion. Yeah. Like, I love their relationship, but I kind of agree with Darth Sidious when he's talking about Talzin. You know, saying that, you know, there's a difference between having power and perceived power. And Talzin's smart, but I think she bit off more than she could chew with trying to go after Sidious. And I don't think that she was tactically smart about it. And I don't think that Maul was tactically smart about it. And it was sort of this, unnecessary fight that if they waited a little bit longer and if they might have done like more recruiting or training or more investigating, they might have had a stronger chance. Now, I do appreciate that, you know, Talzin in the end kind of pushed Maul out of the way and said, you know, you need to go. This is over. This is finished. There's nothing more that you can do. So she sees the writing on the wall, but, you know, she's been dealt a bad hand. You know, I think Claire said this is probably like the third time, you know, that things just haven't gone her way. So I think it's one of those things where this was a battle that they shouldn't even have fought in the first place.
I think,
coming in with the hot takes.
I left Talzin is complicated, but I don't think she's completely perfect either. Obviously, for Maul, both of these influences are bad. especially like when your son is back for from sure. the dead, and the first thing you do is like give him robot legs and send him out to do God knows what. He ends up getting your other kid killed as well. Like, it it doesn't seem like great parenting. Obviously, at the end, she redeems herself slightly by saving him. But and he obviously holds that grudge pretty clear, like even up to Rebels. Obviously, he hates the Sith for killing his brother and his mother. But it's complicated. Yeah, I like it. It's complicated. Like, obviously.
Yeah. And like, she's just like everyone else, basically, in this story, motivated by, she uses the dark side, and like all dark side users, she's motivated by revenge, just like, you know, everyone else. So, like, that's, you know, we know in Star Wars, that is not a winning formula, right? The people. Mm. Yeah. And, you know, everything, it's all machinations to get everyone, you know, revenge on people you feel have, you know, screwed up your life. And I think that actually leads us into our next relationship, which is between Sidious and Talzin, the two sort of figureheads of both sides of this battle. And Talzin explains how, you know, they were once, you know, sort of allies of sorts, and even like she was supposed to be Sidious's right hand, and instead he betrayed her and took her son. And so again, this is why she's got beef with the guy, and this is why Maul is no longer, you know, losing his mind on whatever that trash planet was. because he became, her son became a tool to exact revenge on these characters. So what do you guys think about the two masters dynamic, Sidious and Talzin?
This brings me kind of back to like the mother's love kind of thing for Maul. Like, Sidious took her child and abused and shish kebabbed her other children and betrayed her alliance with them. And I mean, like, if you ever approach like a bird that's guarding a nest of eggs, it can be this tiny little bird, but it will chase you the hell down. And like, it will stop at nothing, even to the point of leaving the nest vulnerable. And that's kind of what happens to this, is she goes to such lengths to get revenge on him for wronging her in so many ways and taking so much from her that she misses this giant blind spot. And it just really shows how incredibly cunning Sidious is. I mean, we know he's the puppet master, and the fact that he could be outsmarted at the end and he couldn't have predicted that Darth Vader would be his downfall is super, super interesting to me, because he knows exactly how everybody is going to behave in every situation and how they're going to try and outsmart him at every step, including with Mother Talzin. And it's interesting. But yeah, just be careful who you try to use as a pawn in your schemes, because they might come and get you. Basically.
I like that there was that dynamic between Darth Sidious and Mother Talzin. And it shows some more background information into Darth Sidious's rise to power, because he has stayed relatively quiet, up until, him being like a political figure on Naboo and then running to take over Chancellor Valorum's spot. So before then, he's been pretty quiet and sort of working underground to attain specific knowledge and powers. And so seeing that dynamic that he has and seeing that relationship that he formed in order to gain what he needed is very interesting. And it's, you know, Claire, you made a good point when you're talking about how he was able to tie up all of his loose ends. And the thing that he wanted most, Anakin, was the one that was his downfall. So maybe this was a foreshadow, like maybe Talzin's demise was a foreshadow as to what will happen to Sidious down the road. Spoiler alert.
Spoilers.
Dum, dum, dum. What does happen to Sidious?
He gets the shaft.
He gets the shaft. But
poor guy. I'm sure he didn't deserve it.
Bringing it back.
There we go. So now, I guess the last piece of this little puzzle is between Maul and the forces he has gathered, as we saw in the Clone Wars, and that is, it became known as the Shadow Collective, and we see it crumble in Son of Dathomir. So this alliance didn't last too long.
Can we,
but it was surely compelling.
Best moments set to Phil Collins. Take a look at me now.
Taking over Mandalore, beating them.
Genuinely, one of the all-time great lines of, "So you're telling me that the place I can find Jabba is Jabba's palace."
Also,
and then killing.
Can
the
we
dude.
Collectively agree all-time that, great? Shadow Collective is a great name for a band.
Oh, wholeheartedly.
Dude, let's start it at Celebration. I call Triangle.
I'll be the keys.
Yes.
Nice. So, how do you guys...
Nikki's like, done with this.
It's like, that is a compelling band. Keys and Triangle. We got this. Reshaping the musical scene. But anyway, what did you guys think about that dynamic of, you know, these obviously selfish criminal groups realizing that their partnership is not as profitable as they were hoping it would be?
Funny.
Oh, man. That's so... I think that has more to do with Darth Maul's leadership skills, because if you're going to recruit mercenaries, they're going to expect pay. Like, that's just the main common sense of anything. If you want soldiers underneath you who are mercenaries, you know, the two things that they need to fight are weapons and money. And if you cannot supply the money, and if they're running low on weapons, they're out of there. So that's, I think that's a very big reflection on Darth Maul's leadership skills. I think, those skills are non-existent. And, Dooku does mention that, you know, in the comic series, he tells Maul, you know, I think you're starting to learn the difference between recruiting people underneath you, and maintaining that relationship. So, you know, Darth Sidious is one step ahead once again with that, as he's recruiting underneath all of the, like, all of these planets underneath the Republic. He's maintaining relationships with them. So when he makes the flip from Republic to Empire, everybody's on board. So I just think that's more of a reflection on Maul's leadership skills. He shouldn't have chosen mercenaries if he couldn't pay them, or if he couldn't, be there for them, essentially, to like help them fight their battles.
I think that's really interesting because, like you said, like he doesn't have those skills. But now we know, like post Solo, that he has this whole other operation up and running, and he's definitely learned from that failure, right? Like because he's basically not that involved in the grand scheme of things. Behind the scenes, we don't even really get to see him until the end of Solo. So, I like the idea that maybe he learned a few tricks from this trying to run a different criminal organization before. The second question I wanted to ask you, Kristen, actually, was: do you think if the Phantom Menace went a different way, could Darth Maul have handled the Clone Wars in the role that we know now Count Dooku had?
Oh, like if Maul survived and he was working with Darth Sidious to help secure politically the Republic, essentially?
Pretty much, yeah. Like trying to lead.
No. I love Darth. I love Darth Maul, and I think he's a great villain. But he is, you know, the classic villain that relies solely on power in the physical sense. And so I think, you know, Dooku doesn't get a lot of credit in the Clone Wars. You know, when people trash the prequels, you know, Dooku's very powerful because he's reserved, and because he understands politics. There's a lot of politics in the Jedi Council. I think that's one of the reasons why Dooku left. So he understands the long game, which is to secure everything under Sidious's rule. And in order to do that, you can't just go from planet to planet and attack people and show your might. You have to play the political game. And so I think Darth Maul would have failed with that. And sooner or later, Sidious would have gotten rid of him himself if he didn't die in The Phantom Menace.
You know, I don't like disagree, but I'm not so sure because, and it's kind of leads us into our next like topic, which is talking about the past and what came before Son of Dathomir. And that's in, well, or I guess I don't remember the title of the episode, but when he comes back and he's got his robo legs and he like Darth Maul or sort of takes stock of the galaxy and he's like, oh, they started without me. And I always love that line because it means he was prepared. Like he trained to be part of this master plan. So obviously we never got to really see that go into effect, but I feel like he wouldn't be as lost at like, or like as ineffective as it might seem because he did spend, over 10 years, I guess we can assume, you know, being part, you know, being groomed by Sidious to be a part of the Clone Wars. So I think it is definitely, it's a great like sort of mind puzzle to think about and ponder what he would have done in the,
I definitely agree with you. That's a good point. I'd forgotten about that line. I just don't know if he would have lasted as long underneath that. That's my only question. Yeah.
You can talk the talk, but can you do it?
I agree with you too, because at least it seems like in all of the additional like Darth Maul, Sidious, like pre-Phantom Menace content we've gotten, which admittedly is not that much, it seems like Maul was just itching to go, even when the plans weren't ready to be set in motion. And I think that's one thing that Dooku does have over Maul. Not only does he have this title and this notoriety and this noble status when he leaves the Jedi Order, he can go back and be Count of Serenno, which is, you know, kind of a big deal. But yeah, you're right, Kristen. He does know how to play that political game. And even if Maul was geared up to do that, I feel like there's something about Maul's impatience and lack of finesse at playing the game and lack of notoriety as well at that time. I feel like he would have some issues during, you know, leading the separatists during that time and being somebody that that people want to follow, that systems would want to be, you know, in league with.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I guess also just to mention the Shadow Collective again, because we watched them form in the Clone Wars. I guess, do you think like the writing was always on the wall that it would fall apart by just having these like kind of people coerced into a group together?
What do you mean, like the group that followed Maul?
Yeah, like, you know, we see it in the Clone Wars, and I mean, it starts off with him telling Pre Vizsla, like, yo, shut the fuck up. I'm the one with the red lightsaber. I'm the smart guy. You just do what I say. And then it just continues with decapitating most of the Black Sun Council and just sort of like this idea that It was never a healthy marriage. And I don't know if I feel like sad watching it fall apart, but I think it was a really cool thing to introduce into the Clone Wars, and to see it not last that long, I think was disappointing. But was it always predictable? I guess is my question.
When you keep on pushing somebody, eventually they're going to start pushing back. You know, Maul isn't the only strong person out there. And when you have a group of people that say, I've had enough, you know, eventually that's the turning point in a relationship. You know, I think that's true for any type of organization that takes power. I mean, you look at the Empire, and even though the Empire outnumbered the Rebellion, they were still a group that was pushing back, saying, I've had enough. So something as like a large scale like that, that can still be overridden, you know, absolutely. I think this group dynamic was doomed from the start, was going to fall apart, because you have Darth Maul, who's very and forceful. He's pushing people and saying, I'll kill you, or I have a red lightsaber. And then you have these other people that are deciding to push back, saying, I'm tired of playing this game. You promised us money. You promised us this. And you're not fulfilling that. So yeah, I think the writing was on the wall.
Yeah. And even like, I guess even before that, this real power grab started with Darth Maul. Why, it's just Mr. Maul.
Mr. Maul.
he stops treating Savage like a brother, and he's like, look, I'm the captain now. and it sort of like, that's where it all starts. And even though that relationship doesn't really fracture, like you might have suspected it would after that move, it's interesting that point where he really like sort of stops thinking about partnerships, and he's just like, okay, I'm going for this. So Maul does, he's a pusher.
Yeah.
he pushes people.
Oh my god. You bring up an interesting point. He is a pusher, but he doesn't make for a very good leader. And this is a really important learning lesson. Yes, you do learn lessons. Very important life lesson for him to learn, that, you know, your own plans for revenge, you know, you can't just use these giant criminal empires as pawns and have them sustain these huge losses and have them still want to get behind you and there's only so much that they're willing to take, because they don't need you. And it is interesting that, you know, that in Solo, A Star Wars Story, that Crimson Dawn can end up having such a fragile alliance with the Pikes. I'm curious to see how we get there, because he kind of really screwed them over. And it's interesting. It's very interesting to think about. Yeah. I mean, obviously knowing that, Siege of Mandalore is coming, and knowing how far he falls in Rebels when we meet him. It's very interesting to see one of these steps in his downfall, and it's like the beginning of the end for him here. He just had a big victory on Mandalore, but now he's starting to lose control, and I'm excited to see Siege of Mandalore to see where the continuation of this story goes too.
Yeah, let's jump into the future, because that's why Maul is such a big part of the sort of fandom right now, because we're getting more. And I guess chronologically going, we do have Siege of Mandalore coming up in season 7 of the Clone Wars later this year. And we did get bits and pieces of that in the Ahsoka novel, but nothing like that you can really hang on to. So that'll be awesome to see it in its animated form. And then, yeah, as we talked about, Shadow Collective is gone, but Maul leads Crimson Dawn in the time period of Solo. So Crimson Dawn is interesting, as we've talked about, because we see all these issues of Maul's leadership and I guess his shortcomings, but he is leading this fearsome criminal empire by the time of Solo. So I almost wonder if it's like maybe he's just more focused. I think, like, you know, like with Kylo Ren, right? Like Snoke is like, you were unbalanced, your soul was split. And I think maybe in Son of Dathomir, he was just going through a little too much personal shit. And by the time of Solo, by the time of Crimson Dawn, he knows how to play this game better. And maybe that's why he's sort of just doing a better job being all Ray Park like in his hologram life. But yeah, I mean, obviously we don't have much information, but after Solo, like, what excites you about Crimson Dawn? How do you feel about Crimson Dawn?
I think that, you know, Crimson Dawn probably means that Maul has been learning from his mistakes. And I don't know if this is true or not, but maybe Crimson Dawn is a smaller organization, and an organization that is already funded well. So that's sort of taking the, you know, okay, I got to pay these guys type scenario out of the window, to where Maul can focus more so on his main thing. And I think Crimson Dawn also has an invested interest with, you know, going after Sidious and uprooting the Empire, because that means they'll be in charge. So I'm very curious to see what that discussion is going to be like, how they're going to work that out, and what their role is going to be in that. Like, if they succeed in dethroning the Emperor, how much of a power role is Maul going to have? And, you know, how much of a power role is the Crimson Dawn going to have? Are they going to have like a Senate type thing? You know, so I'm very curious to see what that conversation is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we see Maul and his character resolution in Star Wars Rebels. And just thinking about Crimson Dawn, we somehow have to go from Maul leading this, you know, crime syndicate to then being on the run from the Inquisitors on Malachor. So there's obviously a lot of real estate there for how Crimson Dawn gets toppled. And I wonder if some of that will be, you know, maybe some of those same shortcomings that we know of Maul now. I wonder if those might resurface and lead to Crimson Dawn's downfall.
Definitely. Sure. Definitely.
Sure. Autobiography. Like, so it's told.
And have the audiobook read by Sam Witwer.
Yeah. have it, like, told from his point of view. So not everything is correct. Like, changes the details slightly. But it gives you a better idea of what. Like, maybe, like, have it. So it's an autobiography for Darth Maul, but maybe, like, someone like Luke Skywalker is written in the side bits. It's like he's annotating it, saying stuff like, this isn't true. Like, records show that. Blah, 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 blah.
I love that. Like with the Book of Sith and with the and stuff like that. Did you ever flip through those books?
Yeah.
They have. Yeah.
Yeah, sort of like
yeah, they're smile. Great. Okay, so some quick fire factoids for you guys. Just some cool things in this comic that shows up in other places. The Stygian prison that Maul is broken out of features in Rebels Season 1, which is where Kanan and Ezra find the remains of Luminara Unduli. Nice and creepy. And they meet the Grand Inquisitor for the first time. Then the asteroid base appears in Rebels Season 3. That's where Kanan and Ezra go to meet Maul. And Ezra and Maul do their little holocron weird thing where everything goes really bright. And find out Kenobi. Then, let's see, not the first time Mother Talzin has tried to make or retake physical form, and you can see that in the pretty fun episodes, in my opinion, at least. I think they're great. The Temple of Doom remix of Star Wars, where Mace and Jar Jar and Queenie have to sort of stave off the darkness and go on a little adventure.
The Jar Jar gets laid arc, right?
Oh, yeah. So there's also Gar Saxon is in this, and he's also in Rebels. He's one of the Imperial Super Commandos and given control of Mandalore by the Empire. So you can see he switches allegiances very quickly. And then there's another character called Rook Cast, and this was an interesting character because of her helmet, which has these little, like, I don't know how to describe them exactly, but they're almost like eyes. And if you pay attention to Sabine's helmet, she has that same design above the sort of visor. And I remember that sort of sparking a lot of talk when you found out Sabine's sort of heritage was connected to Death Watch and House Vizsla and stuff. There's a lot of interesting speculation about Sabine's possible connection.
And I remember at one point that Pablo Hidalgo had tweeted about that helmet being one of the elements that inspired her design for Rebels. That was way, way back. But also, one thing I was wondering, we don't have an answer for this. What happened to Rook Cast? She's beautiful. I love her armor. I want to wear it every day. And this is literally her only appearance. So are we going to see her in Siege of Mandalore? Are we going to do, I don't know, but baby, come back. I think she's awesome.
Maybe she goes out in that battle, or what if she's like another Dryden?
I'd be down.
You know, maybe he's got little underlings around the galaxy. Okay, well, I guess we will start wrapping up our discussion there. In classic Imperial Senate podcast fashion, I want to ask you guys, what made you the most moist about this comic, and who is your MVP of this story? So just one by one, we'll go through that really quickly.
Oh, man. I think the MVP of this story is Darth Sidious. He was kicking ass and taking names, and he was one step ahead of the game the whole time. So that, that made me the most moist about this comic.
Sidious machinations.
I gotta say that Grievous was my boy in this episode. Not only did he get the final stabby stab on Mother Talzin, RIP, sweet baby. He had some great one-liners, like telling Dooku that, you know, hope I don't have to take your lightsaber, buddy. And then, and also he just had some super awesome action in this, so. I was pro Dooku, I was pro Grievous. He made me very moist.
There we go. How about you, Charlie?
Who made me most moist? I'm going to go out on a limb and say Darth Maul.
There we go.
He's a lesser known character. Yeah, I just thought it's interesting to get into his head and actually see him have some emotions. We saw a little bit of it in the Clone Wars when Savage died. And we see a little bit of it in Rebels, but it was nice to see that, I guess. The MVP has to be... I think I agree. It has to be Sidious. He's been...
There we go. Okay, I am in 100% agreement with Claire. My MVP of this story is General Grievous. The guy does nothing but flex in every scene that he's in. I mean, like, it starts and he's like, "You, my guys, just why are you not killing this fucker? Like, just get this over with." And then when he escapes his cell and he's just mowing through these Mandalorians, and he's like, "Man, tell them, send more dudes. I'm just having a good time." And he's just wiping them out. He gets the kill, like Claire says. And I think my favorite panel of the whole comic is when the wall bursts open and Grievous is just there in the standing there with the wind blowing his cape, and he's like, blood is about to spill, all right. Yours, motherfucker. So I agree. I love Grievous. I love how he's always sent to deal with Night Sisters. So Grievous is my MVP. He makes me moist. And there we go. So thank you, everybody, for joining us on this discussion of Maul, Son of Dathomir. We will be back soon with more literary deep dives. I hope you enjoyed this one. You can also check out the two-part episodes we did on Thrawn alliances, which was a lot of fun. And we're looking forward to exploring a lot of the new novels that will be coming out later this year. Of course, if you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at Imp Senate Pod, on Instagram at Imperial Senate Pod. You can like our Facebook page for show updates and other things. If you feel like sending in questions or voicemails, you can send them to imperialsenatepodcast@gmail.com. You can get your sweet ass swag from tpublic.com/user/theImperialSenatePodcast. And of course, if you'd like to support us monetarily, you can become a patron on our Patreon page, and that would be amazing. You can see all sorts of cool content, a vlog done by Claire, just posted. So check that out. You can also join our community group if you play Star Wars Battlefront 2 on PlayStation Network. We'll be organizing all sorts of fun little play sessions and whatnot. Shoot bad guys or good guys with your Imperial Senate Podcast friends. And where can we find you guys individually?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Seastribs.
I am on Twitter and Instagram as well at Kristen K. Bates.
And I am on Twitter at CMWASHBY.
Okay, and you guys can find me at Naquicious, NAQUICIUS, on Twitter. And we'll all be happy to talk to you guys outside of the show. So once again, thanks for listening to us. And remember, there are those with power and those who merely dream of power. So go out there and get power. Don't just dream about it. That's all we ask. Okay. Until next time, thank you guys again for listening, and we will catch you later. Bye.
See ya.
Dissolved the council permanently. The last remnants of the Old Republic have been swept away.